Good evening, and thank you so much for being here. Appreciate your presence. Appreciate your desire to be here with us as we worship our God together. We have been in a series so far looking at this idea of hungering for reality. And what that means is to try to find a faith, trying to find a walk with God, trying to embrace what's real and not these virtual realities or augmented realities where we try to use something that's fake, that's not long-lasting, that's not everlasting, and try to use that to replace that which is genuine. I think within all of us, we have a desire for things that are genuine, things that are pure. And that desire for purity, that desire for genuineness, is a hunger that we've got inside us. We've looked at several of these lessons, and tonight I want us to turn our attention to what it means to release our potential. There are a lot of us that throughout the course of our lives and our walk with God have been or maybe still are going through the motions. Not really being what we ought to be, not being what we should be, not being what God has designed us to be, but we're just existing. And we wonder, because we have just existed, because we have just gone through the motions, why it doesn't feel like it should feel. We wonder why we don't feel like Paul or Peter or Timothy or Silas. And we see the things that they're doing and what they're accomplishing, and we wonder, well, why don't I feel like that? Why can't I do those things? And then we start, we turn on that augmented reality, we turn on that virtual reality, and we say, well, they're different from us. They must be superhuman. Or that was a different time. Or we turn on all these filters to say all the reasons why we can't move forward and be what we ought to be and what we should be, when the truth is there are some things that are just simply holding us back from realizing that potential, from releasing all of that pent-up energy we've got in us to be something more than we are. Let's talk about ways in which we can do that tonight. The first thing I want us to consider and understand is that the idea of releasing our potential or realizing our potential or maximizing our potential is very much a biblical concept. This isn't a, you know, self-help, you know, quick pick-me-up fix that I'm doing here tonight. I want us to understand Paul, as he wrote in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 17, as he's giving instructions, listen to what he says. And to Archippus, see that you fulfill the ministry that you have received in the Lord. You know what ministry is? You know, we, especially in the denominational world, but all over in the religious organization, we turn a bunch of stuff into ministries. There's this ministry and that ministry. The word ministry, if we strip out the, you know, biblical fanciness of it, it's service. It's service, okay? That's what we're talking about. And he says, Paul, as he's writing instructions, he says, do the service that you've received, wait a minute, here's this funny word here, in the Lord. There's work, there's service that you and I ought to be doing in the Lord. There's work that all of us have. I don't know what the situation is here, and none of us do. Commentators expound on the stuff like this all the time. I don't know if our friend Archippus here was struggling with that. And this is Paul's way of saying, hey, maybe if you're reluctant to what you ought to be doing, here's a little pick-me-up. Maybe he's really doing a good job and Paul's just trying to be encouraging. I don't know what the point of this statement is, other than I want us to understand, if we got a letter here in Danville from the Apostle Paul, there may be some of our names in there. Mike, do the work that God has for you in the Lord. Our names may be very much there. Paul, as he writes to Timothy, says this, as for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, and fulfill, here's that word again, your ministry, your service. There's stuff that you and I need to be about, that we need to be doing, that this is work that we have in the Lord. And we need to rise up to the potential that we have in us. I want to ask you a question about our friend Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 4 is where that passage came from. Was Timothy a young orator when Paul found him? Anybody remember what Timothy was doing when Paul found him? Paul comes back and Timothy is being raised by his mother and his grandmother. They're the spiritual influences in his life. And Paul decides he's going to take him on this missionary journey with him. That Paul's going to take him under his wing. And Paul's going to develop and teach and train young Timothy. It doesn't say anything about Timothy being schooled at Gamaliel. It doesn't say anything about Timothy having these fine, innate characteristics within him, does it? No. Timothy's just a young man. Now, the interesting part about the story that I've always wondered is that the last time Paul had come to town, they had thrown stones at him until he stopped moving. And when he comes back in town, some mother and grandmother let their little boy go with him. Now, I don't understand how that happened, but that's what happened. And Timothy was raised and trained and developed. And Paul's telling him, remember 2 Timothy, this is one of the last letters that Paul wrote. Paul's still encouraging him to release his potential, to do the work of an evangelist, to fulfill that ministry. I want us to consider that if Timothy, at that point that Paul writes that letter, is still working to release his potential, that you and I have a bunch of stuff we haven't tapped into yet. That you and I have some potential that we haven't tapped into yet. But let's kind of start here. Why? Why haven't you and I done more with our potential? Why are you and I struggling with that? Why aren't we embracing what we ought to be? Why aren't we doing the things that we should be doing? I'll tell you that most of us don't see our own potential. Most of us see our flaws and don't see the potential. When we look at our lives, when we're standing in front of that bathroom mirror that I talk about a lot, when we're looking, we see all the ugly first. We don't see any of the pretty. We see the ugly. We see the warts. We see the spots. We see the flaws. We look at all of that, and that's what we see in ourselves. We have a huge self-esteem issue in our society. Nobody likes the body that they're in. Nobody likes the way they look. Nobody likes the way they talk. They don't like their hair. They don't like their clothes. We don't like anything about ourselves. And we've just beat this down, and then we sometimes hide and say, well, I'm just being humble. No, you're not being humble. We've got our own issues. And if we didn't have so many issues, then plastic surgery wouldn't be a multi-billion dollar industry. There are people that are every day trying to change that appearance because they don't like it. We're not comfortable. Because what do? When we look at ourselves, we see the flaws. I want to tell you a story about a sculptor. It's a sculptor named Antonio. And Antonio got this very beautiful, very precious, enormous piece of marble. And he was commissioned to make a statue out of this piece of marble. And as he tried and looked, and he worked for 25 years, he worked on this, and finally gave up and said, there's too many flaws in this marble. And he discarded the material. Very expensive, very, very expensive material. He discarded it and said, it can't be done, it can't be worked with, there's too many flaws in it. And they said, we're not buying you another piece of material, kick rocks. A few years later, they commissioned a 25-year-old young up-and-coming artist named Michelangelo. And Michelangelo takes this same piece of material that's been sitting there, that's been weathered, and turns it into this. Some of you may recognize the statue of David that is sitting in Florence. One of Michelangelo's centerpiece works that he created. He created this at 25 out of materials that another sculptor threw in the trash because they had, quote, too many flaws. Friends, we can be so critical when we look in that mirror and all we see is flaws that we can't see the masterpiece that's waiting to be uncovered. We can't see what's within us that's waiting to come out because all we can see is what's wrong. All we can, and we discard an entire life because all we can see is what's wrong. I can't remember where I read this, but I read it recently, and I haven't committed it to memory yet. But the author was talking about the vastness of wealth. And he said, you know where the most wealth is found in the world? I want you to think about that for just a couple of seconds. Some answers that automatically start rolling off your head are maybe in the oil fields of Texas, right? The oil fields of Saudi Arabia. Maybe in Silicon Valley. Someplace like that. Maybe some of you go to the stock exchange in New York or the Merck in Chicago. He said, no, where the vast amount of wealth is just down the block from your house. It's in the cemeteries that are full of untapped potential. Songs that were never written. Paintings that were never created. Ideas that were never acted upon. Inventions that were on the cusp that somebody just didn't have the courage to step out and place. That the vast majority of wealth is lost because of an inability to release potential. An inability to act on what's there. An inability to take risk. Same author said that faith should be spelled R-I-S-K. Because if you truly have faith, then you'll step out. But to say, God, I believe you, but I'm going to stay right here where I am, you really don't believe him. Imagine that conversation with God and Abraham. God says, Abraham, get up, go. We're going to go and I'm going to take you to a new land. See these stars? Your inhabitants are going to be greater than the stars. I'm going to give you a son. I'm going to give you all these things. And Abraham said, God, I believe you, but you know, I'm good right here. You think Abraham would have been the father of faith? Or what about later on when God told Abraham to sacrifice his son, his only son, in whom he loved? And God said, and Abraham said, God, I believe you, and I believe you gave him to me, and I believe it, but we ain't going to go up that mountain. I trust you. I have faith in you, but I'm not going up that mountain. Would Abraham's faith have been reckoned to him as righteousness if he didn't take the R-I-S-K to follow through? I don't think so. But remember, this stuff's easy, right? I want you to think about another guy. What do you think of when I say the name Gideon to you? What do you think of when I say Gideon? Mighty man of valor, right? We think of Gideon, and he led the army. And he was one of the great judges, and he was this big, mighty man of valor. At least that's what the pictures on the walls downstairs say, right? And that's how we teach the story to our kids, right? Let's back up at the beginning of Gideon. Judges chapter 6, verses 11 and 12. The angel of the Lord came and sat under the Teberinth at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abizrite, while his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. Now, here's some stuff, again, if you read this way too quick that you missed. I'm going to slow down for you. First off, what's Gideon doing? Gideon is threshing wheat in a wine press, hiding from Midianites. Gideon is cowering behind a wine press, trying to thresh wheat because him and his father are afraid the Midianites are going to come. And when the angel says, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor, the only person that believes that statement is the angel. Because I want you to skip down a couple of verses with me. In verse 15, he said to him, please, Lord, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest and I'm the weakest in my father's house. What did Gideon say to the angel? Angel says, your potential is to be a mighty man of valor. Gideon says, but my flaws. See, the only person that believed what Gideon was capable of was God. Gideon didn't believe it. Gideon didn't want to believe it. He saw his flaws. Gideon couldn't release his potential. He had to be talked into it. And friends, I'm convinced that the same way that the angel looked at Gideon and spoke to Gideon is the way God looks at you and me. You're a mighty man of valor. There's so much good that's just waiting to be done. But we have this response. But I'm of the weakest clan and I'm the weakest in my father's house. Moses said the same thing, didn't he? I'm going to send you into Egypt. God's speaking to him from the burning bush. Again, these pictures just amaze me. God's speaking to him from the burning bush. And he says, go back and tell Pharaoh and bring my people out of Egypt. And Moses is like, what am I going to say? I'm not real good at the talking thing. What about my flaws? What about what's wrong with me? Not the fact that my God says I can do this. Not the fact that he wants me to. Rather, let me tell you about all the... I'm sorry, God. You just don't understand what's wrong with me. I see what you're doing here, right? I got on the nice clothes and I brushed my teeth today. But if you only knew who I am, you'd have walked by. Let me introduce you to a nice young man down the street. He'd be far better suited for this than me. That's what we do, don't we? We may not be that bold about it, but that's what we do every time we sit there and are stunned and in inaction. There's work that needs to be done. Looks like a job for Damon. He's a lot better at this stuff than me. I'm going to sit right here in my pew, and I'm going to look away and hope nobody looks at me. We're so worried about what's wrong with us that we can never see what's right. What I want you to be able to see is what Paul writes here in 2 Timothy chapter 2. I want you to understand that this is how God looks at us. Now, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, listen to him, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. There's a lot of us in this room tonight that are happy to raise our hand and say, yeah, I'm the clay and the wood. I'm not the gold and silver type vessel for God. I'm not the cup that he drinks out of. I may be the privy or something, but I'm not the cup that he drinks out of. God says he takes those dishonorable vessels and makes them honorable. That it's through God that we can be cleansed from unrighteousness or things that are dishonorable, and we can be made into a vessel for honorable use. That yes, there's some work to do. 100% there's some work to do. But there's, again, I want to emphasize that there's work to do. We're not going to get there being inactive. We're not going to get there wishing and hoping. We're going to get there through work. We're going to get there by acting on that potential. So here's the meat of the lesson tonight. We're going to talk about 10 things. 10 keys to releasing our potential. Now, I know there's many of you that just got nervous and looked down at your watch and thought, Mike's already been talking for 20 minutes and he's going to talk about 10 more things, so we're going to be here until midnight. I promise we'll try to get it through these fairly quick, but I want you to think about these and I want you to write them down, and I want you to consider how these things apply. They're so critical. They come from a book by a guy named Miles Monroe. The name of that book is Releasing Your Potential or Releasing Our Potential or something like that. So I'm going to give a quick disclaimer on that book. About 80% of that book's garbage, okay? There's a lot of hokey stuff in there, and there's a lot of stuff that's completely anti-biblical in there, all right? But the 20% is really, really good. And these 10 key points, when we look at them biblically, as we're going to try to do tonight, these key are really, really solid for us releasing and unlocking our potential. So no blanket disclaimer like Scott gave this morning. Everybody should go read this book. If you go read the book by Miles Monroe, read it carefully and maybe with gloves on because there's some junk in there. First, know your source. In order for us to realize our potential, in order for us to release our potential, we first have to realize what our source is. I want you to think about the fact if today at your house, if you've got a wooden table, the strength of that wooden table comes from the tree that you cut it down. If I go out in my backyard tonight and I grab a bunch of branches that are broken, that are withered, that are hollowed out, and I try to craft them into a table, how strong do you think that table is going to be? It's not going to be very strong at all, is it? But if I cut down a solid, healthy tree, and it's strong and durable, and it maybe tears up a couple of saw blades because it's so hard to get through, then I'm going to have a very durable table. If the wood is weak, the table will be weak. The potential of the table and the potential uses for that table are then determined based on the source of where that wood came from. You all agree with me? I want to tell you the same thing in our lives tonight. Our potential is determined by our source, and our source is God. Our potential is limitless in a lot of ways. God can use a carpenter from a no-name town that people use as a curse and allow him to lead people. God can use men like Gideon who were cowering behind a wine press and turn him into a mighty man of valor. The Bible is littered with stories of insignificant people that did extraordinary things. There wasn't anything significant about any of the 12 that Jesus picked. But they did extraordinary things. Why? Because of the untapped potential in them. Because they were open. Their faith allowed them to take risks and be led and guided into something greater. If we want to maximize our potential, we've got to realize who our source is and realize that's where our strength comes from. It's not about you and me. Yes, you and I have flaws, 100%. But our flaws are okay because he doesn't have any. And because the power that we can tap into through God allows us to be greater than we ever could be on our own. Second, we've got to understand how the product was designed to function. What were we designed for? Automobile manufacturers make cars that run on gasoline, spark plugs, batteries, piston, oil, water. No matter what you do, if you want a car to work, you've got to use these elements. That's how a car goes. You ever tried to drive a car without gas? Doesn't go very far, does it? Cars are also designed to be cars. They're not designed for anything else. Now, some of you in your house right now have probably some fairly expensive exercise equipment that are doubling as a closet right now, right? You got clothes draped over it, hanging off of it. That's not what that product was designed for. A treadmill was not designed for you to hang your pants over, okay? But when used in its proper context, and a lot of us are like that, right? We're treadmills laying around the house with stuff draped over them. Are we realizing the potential of good that we can do? No. We're a closet. We're dormant. We're inactive. We don't realize what our purpose is and what we should be doing, so we're just doing some other function. We were designed to live by faith and love. That's what we were designed to feed off of, to give. For us to take in faith and love and to distribute faith and love. That's what we're designed to do. We need to understand that and we need to live by that. The third is closely related. We need to know what our purpose is. What we were designed for and what our purpose is. We read about stuff all the day, every day, right? About people having midlife crisis that wake up one day and say, I don't know what I'm doing here anymore. I'm just going through the motions. So, you know, they buy a convertible or a Harley and try to drive halfway across the interstate, right? And decide that's what I'm going to find the meaning of life doing this. We need to understand what our purpose is, what we're here for. If we know what our purpose is, we're not going to have a midlife crisis or a quarter life crisis or three quarters or whatever, right? If we understand that we exist, like every product exists for a specific purpose, we understand what is the original intent of our existence. And we focus on that while we're here, right? We were created with a purpose. And I want you to write that down, and I want you to circle that, and I want you to think about that. You weren't an accident. You weren't a chemistry experiment gone wrong. You were created by a creator with a purpose. You have a purpose in life. That's part of the problem with these worldviews of atheism and all this other nonsense that says that there's no reason that we're here. It was all just a great big accident. Because then you and I don't have any reason to be here. We have no reason to act or inact. We have no reason to do anything. But because we were created, and because we were created with a purpose, we have value. So don't ever stand here and look at your flaws and tell me you're worthless. Because your creator created you with value. And while we want to discount ourselves, our Creator says we're worth more. Our Creator says we have a purpose to be great in the kingdom. We too often look at ourselves like we pick over products at an auction, where we're looking for the flaws and wanting to discount the price. But instead of arguing with an auctioneer about how invaluable we are, we're arguing with ourselves. And we're destroying that self-esteem. And therefore, we believe we're the worst in our kingdom and the worst even within our house within that kingdom. We don't want to answer the call because we believe we don't have any ability to do that. Key number four, we've got to understand our resources. What resources do we have? Every automobile that's manufactured has certain resources that come with it. You know, you've got original manufacturer's parts that if something goes wrong, here's what part you plug into it. For the operation to sustain the product, to make it best or to function at its best, there's certain parts you got to use, right? There's a certain type of oil that needs to go in the car, a certain type of gasoline that needs to go in the car. If you have a regular standard automobile and you try to put diesel gas in it, guess what? It's not going to work. Same thing if you got a diesel vehicle and you try to put regular gas in it, it's not going to work. There are resources that we need to function at our peak. Resources that were created for us to live on, but not live for. Right? We're not to idolize our resources or be controlled by them. Understand, these resources allow us to live. We're not living for them. Our jobs, our careers, what we do for a living is a resource. But that's not what we're here for. Your purpose in life is not to be a construction worker or a teacher or a plumber or a fill in the blank. That's not what you are. That's a resource of what you do as a means to an end. But here's the problem. If my purpose in life was to be a financial planner, for example, then when I retire, I've failed, right? If that was my purpose, our purpose in life is not our resources. Our purpose in life is to get from this life to the next. Our purpose in life is to serve our Creator. And the resources that we have, the jobs, the families, the benefits, the cash, all of those things are to help us fulfill our primary purpose. We need to understand what those resources are and not to spend too much time. Number five, we have to have the right environment. Let's go back to our wooden tables. No matter how much you do to treat and protect that wooden table, if you leave it outside and let the rain and snow and weather beat down on it year after year, what's going to happen? It's going to disrupt the integrity, right? It's going to wash it away. It's not going to be as strong as it was. I don't care how strong that tree was. We're going to weaken the integrity if we put it in the wrong environment. We need to understand what environment we flourish in, right? Our Creator created us for a purpose. And that purpose is to serve Him and to get to heaven. But if we take that purpose and know that's what we're there for, and we spend our lives in riotous living, if we surround ourselves in an environment of people that do nothing but destroy and not build up, that's going to erode our effectiveness. It's going to take us out of what we were designed to do. It's going to make us less effective, less useful. We were designed to function best in a positive environment of fellowship, love, and challenge in order to be maximized. I want you to think about that. Fellowship, love, and challenge. You see, there's a lot of people on TV that sell a lot of books right now that'll tell you all you need is the fellowship and love part of that. We don't need to say anything bad about anything you're doing. We don't need to talk about sin or talk about wrong or talk about the fact that we're not realizing our potential. Let's just be positive. Let's just keep it happy and peppy. That's not what we were designed for. We were designed to be challenged, to be pushed. We were designed to reevaluate where we are and what we're doing. We were designed to be encouraged. Yes. To be built up, yes. To have a family behind us that supports us, yes. But to have that same family call into question when we're doing wrong. That same family tell us, hey, you're falling outside the guidelines. You need some help. Let's pull you back in. Let's love you through this. The key to releasing our true potential is to restore us to the environment in which we're going to function the best. I've talked about this before and we don't have time for it tonight. But when we struggle, when we're not functioning at our peak, and then we try to remove ourselves from the church family, we say, well, I can't go in there because I've made mistakes and somebody's going to say something about those mistakes, so therefore I need to pull myself out of that environment. What we're doing is we're saying that the table that got nicked that needs to be repaired, the best thing for us to do is to set it out in the middle of the yard and let it get destroyed. Doesn't make any sense. It needs to be taken in and it needs to be restored. It needs to be rebuffed. It needs to be in that ideal environment. Number six, we have to work out our potential. We can't sit on our bed and read a book or watch YouTube videos about working out and get any healthier, can we? Listen, I've tried. It doesn't work. We've got to actually do something if we want to get better. We've got to actually move. I found this interesting. In this book, Monroe says this. He said, if you think back to the Garden of Eden, to creation, God created the perfect environment. He created Adam with a purpose. Do you know what the first thing He gave Adam was? It wasn't Eve. It was work. He had something to do. He had to work. He was naming animals and they were going through things. And what happened is God realized that Adam was lonely in the work that He gave him. And then He created Eve. Which we're not going to talk about how much work that was. That's a whole other lesson. We got to work out our potential. Good ideas don't bring success. Hard work brings success. We've got to work through things. Further, the people with good ideas that don't act on them don't get listened to anymore. We've got to be able to follow through with what's there and work out this potential. We need to be willing to do things. Seven, closely followed to that, we've got to cultivate our potential. Potential's like a seed. Seeds are great things, but seeds need help. You got to plant it in the right ground in the right soil. Right, the parable of the sower, we know that. If we throw it on rocky ground, what happens? It doesn't take root. If it's thorny ground, it gets choked out. We got to find the right soil to plant that in. But also, we've got to take care to keep the thorns and to keep the weeds away from it. We've got to take care to nourish it, to water it, to give it the fertilizer, to give it positive company in the environment of encouragement. Along those lines, we need to read things that stimulate our faith. We need to spend time in the Word. And if we're not in the Word, the books that we read, the things that we listen to should be encouraging, uplifting, to drive us toward that potential. You know, if you read the Bible and then you read nothing but comic books, you're going to struggle feeding that potential. All right? And I'm not knocking comic books. I like comic books. But if that's the only other thing you read, if you're not pouring good things into yourself and reading and learning and growing, things that stimulate your faith, encourage your self-confidence, and nourish our dreams and goals. If we don't pack that into our lives, what's going to happen is we're going to come up wanting. We don't have enough fuel to get there. We've got to cultivate this potential. Eight, we've got to guard our potential. We've got to guard it from discouragement. That's internal and external discouragement. We've got to guard our potential from ourselves. We've got to realize who we are, what we were created for. And we've got to tell ourselves on those dark, bad days that we're better than this. We've got to tell ourselves when all we see is flaws that there's something great under those flaws. We've got to put ourselves in an environment where even our failures are encouraged. Right? And we've heard these stories of all the great inventions that are really a series of failures on something else. And again, we don't have time to rehash all that tonight. But we've got to guard ourselves and know it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. When we're striving, when we're trying to do something, and we're trying to grow, and we're trying to get better, it's okay to fall. But be somewhere where it's okay to fall. Be surrounded by brothers and sisters that pick you back up, put you back on the bike, and encourage you to keep moving. Don't be somewhere where when you fall, all you get is pointing fingers that says, "See, I told you, you should have never done that." We've got to guard our potential. Nine, we've got to share our potential. It does us no good to keep these great gifts that God has given us under wraps. It does us no good at all. It does us no good to have this great potential and hide it from the world. There's so much good that should be done, that could be done, that could be you. But again, when we let those flaws, when we let our insecurities rule our lives, instead of sharing our potential, what do? We hide it. We lock it away. We can easily think of the people that have stage fright or are afraid that you hear singing locked away in their bedroom that have beautiful voices, but they never sing, right? Or of the artists that draw and sketch in notebooks that never sees the light of day. Or writers that have written beautiful works that are found hundreds of years after they die. Why? Because of fear. Because we haven't shared our potential. Because we haven't let that out. Listen, nobody, when we talk about our work within the kingdom, nobody's first Bible class that they teach goes well. Nobody's does. Don't kid yourself. You know, several of you are very encouraging to both Scott and myself and, you know, about the work that we do from the pulpit and teaching classes. But I'll tell you, it didn't start that way. I've got all kinds of horror stories of the first classes I taught that went awful. Scott, I'm sure, does too. He's probably forgotten them because he's a little bit older than I am. But I can tell you horror stories of the way it went. If I wouldn't have tried, I wouldn't be standing here. If I wouldn't have taken the first leap of faith to come to the classes and find out all the things I didn't know, I wouldn't be standing here. We've got to share that potential. We've got to share what's in us with the world. And what we find when we start sharing it is there's other people that have done this well that will put their arms around you and help you up. Will help you move on. There's a really quick story. I keep looking at that clock and I got so much more to say. Last week in banks really involved with the college and whatnot. And from time to time, we go and kind of proctor some classes. And this group was given presentations on the work they had done, and it was a business communications class. They went out, had to interview people in the community, and then they had to present. And so it was me and another banker and somebody else from town. And so we're listening, and this group gets up, and the girl, as she starts to speak and give her presentation, completely locks up and breaks down. Crying, sobbing, can't get it out, stage fright like I've never seen before. The girl just completely locks up. Now, her partner steps in, and they do a great job with the presentation. They've done a lot of work and done really well. And I'm visiting with the professor afterwards, and I say, you know, kind of what happened. She says, you know, she's the best student I've got in class. Her work is exemplary. I promise you, if you looked at her notes, it's absolutely exemplary. She just has terrible stage fright. And this is part of getting over that, is you've got to make this pitch. You've got to give this presentation. Now, I don't know where that's going to end up taking this young lady. I hope for the best. I tried to give her some encouraging words afterwards. But see, if we don't step out there that first time and fail, and even fail miserably, we're never going to be able to get the courage to keep going. And no matter what we do in life, there's going to be points where we're going to have to talk to groups of people. We've got to share that. We've got to step outside of what's comfortable. Finally, we need to understand the laws of limitation. Now, I know this sounds like I'm contradicting myself from what I said earlier, right? Our source is limitless, but our talents are limited, okay? There's only certain things that we're going to be really good at doing. You know, there are people that are blessed to be song leaders. There's other people that are not. That's okay. Doesn't mean you're less of a Christian. There are people that are blessed to be able to have the talent to preach and lead from the pulpit. There are other people that can't do it. There are front of the house people that are blessed with front of the house stuff, and there are people that are blessed with back of the house stuff. I love teaching the adult Bible class. I would teach that every quarter if they let me. I am terrible with little kids. I'm awful. My style, the way I do, the way I teach the adult class does not play with the little kids. It just doesn't. So I understand my gift for teaching is limited to that type of exposure. I don't belong down there. But there's a lot of other people that are tremendously better at that, that don't ever want to be in front of the auditorium class. That's okay. We need to understand what the limit of our gifts are. But how do you know the limit of your gift? You got to push it. Right? We've got to push right up against that barrier to understand where it is. If we don't try, if we don't stretch ourselves, if we don't take that risk, which is faith, we never know where those limits are. We've got to push ourselves to those limits to understand where it's at. Every manufacturer on every product lays out specifications. There's only a certain limit that this product can take. There's only so much weight that table's going to hold before it snaps. Doesn't matter how strong the wood is, right? There's only so fast your car's going to go before you throw a rod, all right? Everything has limits, and that's okay. But we've got to push ourselves till we know where that limit is. That's what it is in releasing our potential. If we set the limits ourselves, what are we going to do? We're going to set them really, really low. All I can do is this. All I can ever do is just make it to services. I'm never going to be able to open my mouth. I'm never going to be able to teach. I'm never going to be able to talk to others. We've got to push ourselves as hard as we can. I believe that if you would have asked Abraham if he could have followed through with offering Isaac, he would have probably told you no. He didn't think he could do that, but he did it. He trusted in God and did it. He followed with faith. He took that risk. But if you asked him to academically sit around the campfire and talk about all the ins and outs of it, ain't no way. Our faith leads us to do things that are beyond what we believe we're capable of doing. We trust by following God. And God, through his strength, through his power, through his guidance, allows us to be greater than what we are. We are, as we all start out, ordinary household vessels. Some of us in worse shape than others. But if we'll allow God to cleanse us and use us, we can be vessels of honor fit for the Master's use for every good work. And that's what we're here for tonight. I hope if you've taken notes or get out your smartphones and take a picture of that screen. And I want you to think through these things. And I want you to think about what's holding you back and where you are tonight. If you're living up to what your potential is, if you're doing all the things that you could be or should be doing, or if you're hiding behind the wall of self-loathing, if you're hiding behind the wall of insecurity, if you're hiding behind the wall of I can't, tonight I want you to push yourself. I want you to see if there's more in you, to push those limits, to take that risk through strength that we get through God. Paul said it was learned. Remember Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Remember the verses before that, I learned to live without. I learned to live in excess. It's work. It's hard work. But we can be and we can learn those things through Christ who strengthens us. He can teach us and walk with us that we can be greater than where we are. I want you to hunger for reality. Things that are real and your potential that is real within you. Not the fake stuff, not the self-loathing, not the insecurity, but the reality of what God wants you to be. But it starts here. It starts with our plugging into God. We can't do this alone. By ourselves, we are worthless. But with God, we're so much more. If we'll learn about Him and trust Him, let our love grow for Him that allows us to turn away from the world, the cares of the world, to embrace Jesus as our Savior. As the way, the truth, and the life, to die with him in baptism and raising out of that water to be selfless. You know what being selfless means? That means emptying ourselves. That means all of it. That means the pride. That means the insecurity. That means the false humility, where we're hiding behind humility when really it's just fear. Oh, I'm just trying to be humble. No, you're not. You're afraid. Let all of that out of us and rise to learn more, to love more, to trust more, to turn, to embrace deeper, to put away sin, and to be more and more selfless. See, the way the cycle works is every time we go around, we get deeper, we get closer, we get stronger with God. We can realize that full potential that God sees in us. We are all mighty men and women of valor. We just don't see it yet. Pray that God opens your eyes to see it. Pray that you'll have enough faith to take the steps we need to do. If you're not a child of God, then let's help you do that tonight. Let's get you started down this path and pray with you and for you that we can teach you where you need to be. If you are a child of God, but you've thrown away your potential, you've hidden behind these walls of doubt and insecurity, let us pray with you, for you, let us study with you. Wherever you are and whatever you need, let us help you as we stand and as we sing.